Well, hello and welcome to another episode of The Sweet Spot, brought to you by The Racing Post in association with Free Super Tips. I'm Dave Clark, he's Steve Palmer. How are you, mate?
All right, thanks, Dave. How are you? Yeah, challenging Sunday. I think we call it a challenging Sunday. Tyrrell Hatton lost by half a point in the top scorer markets of the Team Cup, and then the Sony Open. We've got a lot to discuss on the Sony Open. A classic night of late night PGA Tour hell, I'd say.
Yes, we'll get on to all of that. Outside of the golf, Steve, what have you been up to?
Outside of the golf, an interesting question, Dave. Yes, we must live lives away from the golf. I've just been trying to stay warm, Dave. It's relentlessly cold, isn't it? Trying to stay warm. I went to a football match. I went to watch Weymouth lose to Dorking on Saturday with my son. Desperately trying to get my son to become a Weymouth FC supporter, but the fact that we lose every week in the bottom of the league makes it quite challenging. But I have had some fun away from the golf, Dave.
A big fan of Dorking, actually, and obviously the bunch of amateurs, brilliant YouTube channel following around the manager, etc.
Yeah, well, they were 1-0 down early against us and they won 3-2. So, yeah, they played well. We won't surrender on our National League South status until it's mathematically impossible. I can assure you of that.
Okay. Right, we'll leave that there then. I don't want to upset you. Right, we'll look back then on the Team Cup. And, of course, Steve's already mentioned as well the Sony Open. We hit the post there. And we'll look forward as well. Two brilliant events. Really good field as well. I think we're going to see the reappearance of Rory McIlroy as well this week. So lots of good stuff to look forward to. Remember to like, comment and subscribe. Let us know who you backed last week, who you're backing this week. Maybe you found the winner. Maybe you hit the post, like Steve. Maybe you bagged a little bit of each way money, Keegan Bradley, like I did as well. So, you know, a little bit of something for everyone. Let's look back then, Steve, before we look forward. Nick Taylor doing the business, coming from a long way off the pace, shooting a final round 65, along with one of your picks, Nico Echeverria. They went to a playoff, and it wasn't to be for your man.
I'm horrified by your lack of chronological order, Dave. Did the Sony Open finish before the Team Cup finished, Dave? I'm sorry.
Yes, just go with it. Come on.
Okay. The Sony Open. You're desperate to get me onto the Sony Open, aren't you?
By the running order.
Yeah, Nick Taylor. I mean, Nick Taylor was 100-1 winner, if you want to cut the long story short. But Nick Taylor looked completely out of it after his approach to the 72nd hole. I mean, he's whacked his approach to the 72nd hole through the green into the grandstand. So he's in the rough right next to the grandstand. So then gets relief from the grandstand. So he takes a club length of relief from the grandstand, goes from rough to fairway. I mean, I'm disgusted with the cool setup at the Sony, because you shouldn't, if you've smashed it through the green into the grandstand, you should be playing your next shot from the rough, shouldn't you? Of course you need a drop. Yeah, it was ridiculous that you could get a club length and then be on the fairway. So he's got an amazing lie for that chip. He's still got to hole it. He chips in from 59 feet for an eagle to get into the playoff with Nico Echeverria. And Nico Echeverria in the playoff dominated the playoff. Sounds crazy to say because he lost the playoff, but he dominated the playoff on the first playoff hole. So we were talking about it before we came on. He's so unlucky to roll off the green. He's like, his approach shot in the first playoff hole was fantastic. It looked about 1-50 to stay on the green when it landed. And then it just slowly but surely, miraculously went off the green. So he should have been putting for eagle on the first hole in the playoff. And then, you know, Taylor's in trouble. Taylor's produced an amazing recovery shot from 85 feet then he holds a 10-foot putt. So Taylor made a miraculous birdie, Echeverria a more conventional birdie. So on they go to the second playoff hole. And again, after two shots, I'm just counting the money, Dave. Counting the money after two shots. Echeverria, he must have gone so short in the betting. I don't know if you were even awake, but you were awake, Dave.
I mean, I didn't. I called it the next day.
I did, you? Because I don't follow the betting, because I don't hedge in those situations. So there's no point in even looking at the betting, because I want to watch the action live. You know, you get clues from the betting on what's about to happen. So I didn't look, but after two shots on the second playoff hole, Echeverria must have gone so short in the bet. And if you do know, then put it in the comments section just to rub salt into my wounds.
What time of the evening was this?
It finished at 2 a.m. Yeah, just getting on for 2 a.m. So yeah, it's challenging in that respect as well. But Taylor's 46 yards away from the pin after two shots, and you know, facing a really difficult pitch. Echeverria, again, is it an amazing approach, like a high cutty five wood. Yeah, it should have landed light as a feather, and it did its best, but still managed to. He was so unlucky; it just rolled into the fringe. Yeah, you know, he could still putt, but it rolled into the fringe. But Taylor's in big trouble. And it, yeah, I'd say probably the shot of the tournament. I mean, either the chip at the 72nd hole or this one. This one was harder. It was an amazing recovery shot. So Taylor sets up a tap in birdie on the second playoff hole through that genius third shot. And Echeverria, he's 39 feet away putting for eagle. Because it was in the fringe, his stroke was a little bit weak, and he left it very short. So he three putted from 39 feet. All of a sudden, Taylor's the champion. And yeah, 2 a.m. on Monday morning, you know, we had to lick our wounds. But yeah, all good fun. All good fun.
And what time did you get off to sleep, Steve, after that?
I was so tired. I went to bed and read some books for about half an hour. And then you we're like professional sportsmen, Dave. You need to be fresh on the Monday morning to get stuck into the Dubai Desert Classic and the American Express. So I was aware that I couldn't you can't spend the night quaffing brandy. You've got a job of work to do, Dave.
Was you not tempted? I think it's probably been a while, is it, since you visited the pylon? Late night pylon visit.
It was probably about 0 degrees at that point, and the pylon's not necessary these days. I'm a very mature, responsible gambler, Dave. We don't need pylons these days. But I was really disappointed, Dave. I'm going to be honest. I was really disappointed because Echeverria looked the winner for so much of that playoff. And as I say, you look back on that chip on the 72nd hole. If Taylor doesn't chip in from 59 feet, we've had a 90-1 winner. But Taylor did chip in from 59 feet, and the rest is history.
It's the hope that kills you, right? Because he wasn't, you know, three shots clear going into the final day. You know, he's come from off the speed himself.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it needed JJ Spawn and Steven Jaeger to sort of choke down the stretch. They were just wobbling away. When Echeverria was playing that third shot from the bunker at 18, it did feel like if he got up and down from there, he got a great chance of winning because, as I say, the leaders were wobbling and Taylor just didn't seem in it. Taylor didn't seem in it until they just suddenly cut to him. His ball's in the fairway. I'm raging about that. Like, how did that get in the fairway? So I've got big issues with the Sony Open greenkeepers and the PGA Tour. They should not be put in a grandstand within a club's length of the fairway. You know what I mean? You know what I'm getting at?
Yeah.
Have I explained that? You should not be allowed to get out the rough if you hit the grandstand. I'm just trying to stay positive, Dave. Trying to stay positive because you might remember at this stage last year, Sahith Theegala finished second in the century at 66-1. So we had a near miss in the century, and we were venting our spleen as we are now. And then we went on to have a fantastic 2024. So I'm hoping another Hawaii near miss is just going to inspire us to have a wonderful.
It's just par for the course. It's just par for the course, Dave.
Par for the course, if you pardon the pun. Yeah, Dave's coming out with puns. We're going to have a good podcast here.
Right. Any other than sort of those that choked is a strong word, but they seemed a little bit reluctant to sprint towards the finish line. Any other takeaways?
Well, Steven Jaeger, very attacking. He took driver off every tee over the weekend. He really went for it. It worked on Saturday. It worked for a fair way on Sunday. And then he started hitting everything left. He hit one into a swimming pool. You would have enjoyed that. They were hunting around his ball and peeking over into someone's house, seeing if they could see it. I think it proved that why ILI Country Club can't be overpowered. I mean, Steven Jaeger had a really good go at it and failed in the end. He's a good player. JJ Spawn will hold his head in shame with how he folded down the stretch there. I mean, Nico Echeverria, you know, I like him. He was grossly underrated last week and, didn't do a lot wrong last week. You know, he was brilliant on Sunday. He bogeyed the first two holes on Sunday and then was fantastic from there. We'll go back into the, go back for more Echeverria, I'm sure.
And we just talk about winners, players that get over the line, Nick Taylor being one of those. And when you're sort of sizing up your bets for each event, that, you know, you want to stay away from the flaky players. You want the players that are going to sort of grab it and just run with it.
Absolutely. You look at Nick Taylor's victories, and they've a lot of them have come in like mad circumstances. You know, when he won the Canadian Open, he held a ridiculously long putt on the final hole to win that. Do you remember all the celebrations? Adam Hadwin was rugby tackled to the ground by a security guard who thought he was just a crazy man. But yeah, Nick Taylor seems to have incredible ability to produce remarkable things at key moments. You know, not the most consistent player. You know, got left out of the President's Cup team last year, controversially. Obviously, the President's Cup in Canada, and he was devastated to not be on that team. But he started the year well and then was rubbish for ages. But when he's on it, when he's got a chance, he's got a great, great granite at the death there. You know, and yeah, he just killed Echeverria back as in that player. Because that 10-foot putt he lined up on the first playoff hole, he'd missed some tiddlers. He missed some tiddlers earlier in the day, but rolled that in with aplomb. He seems to have a good bit of killer instinct when the time comes.
Right, post-hit, playoff defeat, but we go again. Elsewhere last week, Steve, we had the Team Cup, 17-8 was the final score there. We suggested that, you know, GB and Ireland probably looks a little bit short, but they were worthy favourites in the end and cruised home.
Well, absolutely. Yeah, 17-8. I mean, yeah, maybe we should have got our England shirts on and smashed into the 4-7. You know, we were discussing that whether patriotism would have come into play. You know, England thrashed Denmark, but, you know, it must be noted that Denmark was significantly weaker than we expected them to be because, you know, Nikolai Hoggar, don't know if you even realised, Dave, how much you were following, Nikolai Hoggar got ill on the eve of the tournament, which was an absolute hammer blow for the Continentals. Obviously, it was a hammer blow for our Rasmus Hoggar top continental scorer selection because, you know, the Continentals' best pairing was going to be the Hoggar twins together. That was eliminated when Nikolai had to pull out. I mean, he was there at the start of the week. I saw videos of him and Rasmus looking at the locker room, the Continentals' locker room. So it was a late illness that came on and took Nikolai out. And it must have sucked the life out of the Continentals' locker room because it's not like they had a good replacement. The replacement was Julian Guerriere, who is not good under pressure. The only reason Guerriere is a DP World Tour winner is because Jorge Campillo folded like a cheap suit in the Andalusia Masters, you might remember. So Guerriere, you know, replacing Nikolai Hoggar with Guerriere is like replacing a Rolls Royce with a Skoda, I would say. And, you know, I, for one, just was, you know, I was heartbroken before the goal even started last week. I was heartbroken after the goal finished. my heart needs mending, Dave. You need to mend my broken heart. I don't think it would have changed the result because Great Britain and Ireland played amazingly well, but I think it would have made the result closer. And I think crucially, it wouldn't have suckered us into back in the Continentals if there was only one Hoggard in the original lineup. I think it had a lot of knock on effects. You could even say, I think it actually, we would have just concentrated on the top overall point scorer market if we weren't getting up, you know, worked up about the potential for these Hoggard brothers playing together and Rasmus winning the top points. I think we would have focused on the overall. I think we would have had Hatton and Fleetwood. I think it was like a domino effect of misery caused by the Nikolai illness. But again, we dust ourselves down. We go again.
We do. We won't fold like cheap suits if that's what cheap suits do, Steve.
No, that's right. I mean, Tyrrell Hatton was our main bet on that event, and he got 3.5 points from 4 matches, but you needed to get 4 points to be top scorer. Tommy Fleetwood got 4 points.
Got the winning point. Yeah, Fleetwood. Yeah.
Yeah. He played really well on Sunday. So we learn lessons as punters. But has anyone learned any lessons from the Team Cup? I mean, I would question the value of the Team Cup to the European Ryder Cup team. Yeah, I didn't see many pairings last week, maybe any pairings last week that I think will play in the Ryder Cup. I think the value of the Team Cup is overstated by the likes of Luke Donald and all the European bigwigs because he's played in Abu Dhabi. Hardly anyone's watching. It's not an atmosphere anything remotely like the Ryder Cup.
And they're also playing against each other. I'd rather Europe play the rest of the world.
Yeah,
you know, and pair up as you would against, you know, a foreign opposition.
Yes, I think you're right, because you had Tyrrell Hatton up against Thorbjørn Olesen on Sunday. They're two potential Ryder Cup candidates. Yeah, imagine if there was a bit of needle in that match, some sort of rules controversy. They end up hating each other. And then, oh, well, they're teammates again a few months later. I think you're right. I think the President's Cup for America is fantastic, fantastic preparation, because they're playing players they're not going to play in the Ryder Cup. There's a real edge to it. If they're going on an away match, like if they go to Melbourne, you know, they've got a really fierce atmosphere to handle. It's excellent prep for a Ryder Cup combat, but I don't think this is. And I know I've got a downer on it because Nikolai Ørgaard withdrew and it all went horribly wrong. But I think I'd have a downer on it even if it went right in terms of prep for the European Ryder Cup team.
I did enjoy it though, even though we were on the wrong side of the result until I think Justin Rowe started leading the Sweet Caroline, and then it just had to go off. I'd seen enough. Wow, blimey.
Did he really? Well, I mean, the others, the people that aren't English in that team would have found that a little bit offensive then, wouldn't they? Because they did look like an England football team lineup. They all had the England flags over there. Even Tom McKibben's flag, the Northern Irish flag, when it was all wrapped up, you got muddled up. I don't want to cause any offence there, but there's similarities between that flag. So, yeah, it did look like, Justin Rowe's just obviously really, really happy with how it went. Got a bit carried away in the situation, I think. But yeah, probably going to be a Ryder Cup captain at some stage, I would say.
I think a very short price about that. Right, before we move on, you've just mentioned a player there who received a few mentions in the comments last week, Tom McKibben. See the news there? You know, talk of Liv. What are your thoughts? He's, you know, one of your boys.
Yeah. I mean, I was shocked. Probably only one person that was more shocked and appalled than me, and that was Rory McIlroy. Rory, what must Rory be thinking? You know, his young protege there, his mate from Hollywood Golf Club. I think Rory would be more affected than anyone by this news.
Benjamins, though, Steve. It's all about the Benjamins.
is that a bit of Cockney rhyming slang?
Oh, money. It's all about the money.
Yeah. I know. But isn't it a shame? I think it's a shame. I mean, a lot of people suggesting that this news sort of makes it clear how close a deal is. You know, they're suggesting that Tom McKibben and the people around him know a deal is so close, he might as well take some money and then he'll be back doing all the stuff he wants to do anyway. But I don't know. I really don't know. I don't know how close a deal is. And it's very interesting. You had Eugenio Chikara's comments. Eugenio Chikara, a young player who joined Liv at a similar time as Tom McKibben, similar age as Tom McKibben. He's just left the Liv tour and he's parted with lots of comments about how, you know, he never gets in any majors. He never gets in any, he's really sort of anti-Liv. Now he's not on Liv. And he's saying it was a bad decision for him because he thought they were going to get world ranking points and blah, 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 blah. So it's funny. You got one player that, I think everyone was pretty shocked that Tom McKibben joined. It's not happened yet, we must stress. It's not actually happened yet, but he didn't deny it last week, so it seems like it's going to happen. And then you've got the contrast of Eugenio Chikara, another youngster who joined Liv, who is now seems to be leaving Liv. And be interesting to see what Tom McKibben says. He's playing this week in the Dubai Desert Classic. Be interesting to hear from him. But where's the romance gone, Dave?
It's not going to help him on the course, though, is it? I always think players, when this kind of thing, the furore around certain players that did join, none of them went on to have great years and play. They might have earned a lot of money, but none of them seem to set the course alight and have their best year ever in golf. And it just seems to kind of affect their performance as well.
And things were happening for Tom McKibben. He's just won a PGA Tour card. Now he's not going to use it, it seems. I think Tom McKibben would have got all this money quite quickly. He's joined and he's going to instantly get loads of money. But he could have got that money the more conventional route and, stayed in the majors, and his Ryder Cup chances are obviously going to be massively hampered by this. I saw one of our commentators put a really interesting comment about his. McKibben's got a high maintenance girlfriend. He seems to. Was it? I think someone said he went to school with Tom McKibben's girlfriend, and she's very high maintenance. So maybe she's been in his ear and just saying, "Oh, look, we can't turn down that sort of cash." I don't know.
Well, Right, well, he's playing this week, so I'm assuming you're not tipping him. We'll get on to that. So that one will rumble on. Right, two events to get stuck into this week. Where do you want to go first, Dave? The running order starts with
well,
the
which
American
one starts?
Express.
Which one starts first, Dave? Which one starts? Dubai.
Let's
Dubai.
Go. I'll let you decide. Where do you want
Dubai.
To go in the world?
I want to
first?
Go to Dubai. I want to go to Dubai, which will start in the early hours of Thursday
okay.
morning.
Dubai Desert Classic. Then talk to us about the track and the field. Really good field here.
Yes, the famous Majlis course at Emirates Golf Club, Dubai, United Arab Emirates. 7,428 yards, par 72, four par fives. It's been used for this event every year since 1989, apart from a two-year switch to Dubai Creek from 1999 to 2000. Emirates, a low-scoring track in calm weather, can be overpowered by strong drivers. The greens are fairly straightforward. We've got sunny, warm, windless skies this week. Should be a birdie fest. Field of 126 going to post.
Right, previous winners. Rory, Hovland, Casey. Market, 4-1 Rory McIlroy, 11-2 John Rahm, 9 to Tyrrell Hatton, 11s Tommy Fleetwood. A really strong field, this one, Steve, before we get your picks here, like the stars are on show.
Yeah, it's a really exciting event. We've got a lovely mix of LIV players and, there's a huge LIV contingent here. So, fascinating puzzle.
Yeah, I don't mind saying I'm more excited about the Dubai Desert Classic than the American Express, that's for sure. Right,
you
how
say
many
what you want
you
to say,
up?
Dave. You express your feelings on this podcast. This podcast is all about...
Oh, okay. Thank you.
It's a safe place. It's a safe
find
space.
Find a couch in a minute. Yeah.
Any other problems you want to share with us and the community?
I've got a whole host of them.
Okay.
Let's move on. How many are we putting up here, Steve?
Just two selections, Dave.
Oh. That tells me that we're going for someone right near the head of the market. Who is the main selection?
Tyrrell Hatton, 9-1, who nearly brought home some bacon for us last week. He was unbeaten in the Team Cup, 3.5 points from four matches. He beat a tough opponent, as I say, in the singles. Thorbjørn Olesen in the Sunday singles, about as hard as you could get. Hatton was excellent all week. He said he was surprised how sharp he was after the Christmas break. On the Friday four balls, his ball counted on 11 of the 16 holes. He was playing with Tom McKibben. They put the liver and the prospective liver together, and he carried McKibben for much of that session. Then Hatton was 6 under par alongside Matt Wallace in the Saturday morning foursomes, then 2 under par with the same partner in the afternoon. So Hatton just slipped straight back into that form he showed at the end of last year. His live form at the end of last year was exceptional. He won LIV Nashville at the end of June. He had 4 top 5s in his final 5 LIV events. He won the Dunhill Links on the DP World Tour at the start of October, 2nd in the Abu Dhabi Championship, 6th in the DP World Tour Championship in Dubai, 5th in the Saudi International. He's got a magnificent record in this region, as we mentioned last week. He won the Abu Dhabi Championship in 2021. His Dubai Desert Classic form figures from his last 8 starts there, 8-3-3. 38-22, 4-38-31. He's since admitted his head was all over the place in the last Dubai Desert Classic. That was his last DP World Tour event before joining LIV. So he was wrestling with a lot of emotion, deciding whether to make that switch at this stage 12 months ago. Now he's been allowed back onto the DP World Tour because he's appealing his ban, and he's been gaining Ryder Cup points. He's hungry for Ryder Cup points. He's one of the most determined players in this field, I'd say. He spoke last week about how he wants to maintain his streak of qualifying for the Ryder Cup. He doesn't want to get involved in the should they give a pick to the liver. He wants to qualify automatically, and that Dunhill win's given him a chance. These rare DP World Tour appearances, crucial for him. I think he's by far the best bet in this tournament. I think punters should concentrate on the players who played in the Team Cup. It's an ideal warm-up, that, isn't it? Same type of course, same region, small journey to this one. So I think Hatton is the pick of the team cuppers.
Yeah, there's quite a bit to unpack as well, Steve. I mean, I suppose, you know, what would you put it down to? His record in the region. We spoke about it last week. He just likes money. You know, when the big dough's up, he produces the goods.
Yeah, he's like you, Dave. Worships the dollar. A lot of those desert courses can be shootouts, you know, a lot of low scoring events. And, you know, Hatton, obviously exceptionally good putter, always has been. So you can always rely on Hatton to get to a low total. I think we're going to get another one this week. I think about 20 under par is going to win this. And I think Tyrrell Hatton's going to be the winner.
And he's obviously one of the livers. For those that don't know, Steve, you know, they're seeing Tyrrell Hatton and John Rahm teeing it up in these events again. And how are they allowed to do so?
Because you've either got to pay your fine, because the DP World Tour have fined the livers. You've either got to pay your fine or you appeal your fine. And we are in the appeals process, which seems to be dragging on forever. But when you're in the appeals process, you're allowed to play. So, it's helping John Rahm and Hatton have a chance of getting in the Ryder Cup, or at least playing enough DP World Tour events to even be considered for selection.
Okay, right. And they are two of the first three in the betting. Right, that's your first pick. Who's the other?
Laurie Kanter. 66-1, Laurie Kanter, who was also on that triumphant GB&I side last week. Big moment for Kanter. You could see how much he enjoyed himself last week. He's been welcomed back onto the DP World Tour with open arms. He's probably the player. I mean, there's a lot of golfing politics around this week. We'll discuss that later with all the livers coming in there. Laurie Kanter is the player probably most immune to letting this distract him, because he was a LIV player. The LIV guys like him. The DP World Tour lads understood why a player like Kanter would want to go and make some fast money. So all the DP World Tour players like him as well. There's no animosity there. He lost his LIV playing rights, made an emotional return to the DP World Tour, where he was desperate to shed his maiden tag. And he did so in June in the European Open on a long driver's track. You know, Kanter's a really top-class driver of the ball. This is the course for him. I see him threatening a second DP World Tour title on another driver's track. These par fives are there to be overpowered by good drivers. That's where you make your score at the Emirates. Last week, Kanter combined with Jordan Smith to win the Friday four balls. You know, Smith was playing superbly in that, to be fair, was the lead act. But it was a great moment for both of them. They're both from Bath. You had the sort of Bath alliance, the Bath boys. Going to war together. They had an absolute whale of a time. Then they played again in the Saturday morning foursomes, but they came up against the two Continentals who were really doing well last week, Matt Pavon and Romain Langasse. They ended up as joint top scorers. So Kanter and Smith had their hands full against those two. That was Kanter's only defeat of the week, Dave. Kanter and Paul Waring actually produced the highest, the heaviest win of any match last week. Kanter and Paul Waring beat Antoine Rosner and Matteo Manassero 6-4 in the Saturday afternoon foursomes. And then Kanter thrashed Langasse in the singles 5-4. So Kanter took so much from last week. Great stuff. 3 points from four matches. And he's at a layout which really suits him this week. He finished fourth on his Dubai Desert Classic debut in 2021. He's got a good record in the DP World Tour Championship in Dubai on a similar track. And he got some extra practice in there. I don't know if you remember, at the end of 2023, because he moved to Dubai for a few months, Dave. I don't know if you even presented speech by then, but I remember discussing it because we were on Kanter for something else. But at the end of 2023, he moved to Dubai for a few months while his bathhouse was being renovated. So he got loads of practice in at the Emirates. He knows a lot of the back of his hand. I think that's another little factor to add to your head.
Thank you. I wasn't presenting at that point. As soon as you said focus on the Team Cup, I was racking my brains working out who the other selection was going to be. I didn't think it was going to be Laurie Kanter, but here we are.
Well, there's a lot of them that have made that trip over, and I think these are the two best ones. I mean, a lot of the Continentals might have found it a pretty demoralising experience last week. You know, I toyed with Rasmus Hogar, I toyed with Thunderbear Olsson, but I think these two have got the perfect combination of playing well last week, shedding the rust, coming to a course which suits with their tails up. You know, these two have got their tails up.
Right, some of the market leaders then, obviously the big two, Rory and John Rahm.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not a lot of juice in the prices, but I'm sure there'll be, you know, some sort of threat at some point.
Well, McIlroy's going for a third consecutive Dubai Desert Classic title. He's won on this course four times in total. He won the DP World Tour Championship in Dubai on his last start. So McIlroy deserves favouritism, no doubt about it. I wouldn't argue stridently in the face of someone who says they're back at McIlroy this week. All I would say, calmly and respectfully, is that he hasn't competed since November 17. He hasn't competed since November 17. And he's been quite active in promoting TGL. I don't know if you've been following the indoor golf stuff.
Yes. I quite like it.
Oh, good. I'm glad you like it. It's one for the night owls, really. It's through the night stuff. You know, I got enough on my plate with Sony Opens through the night. I can't,
yes.
Can't be dealing with TGL through the night, but I have dipped in and out of it to get a feel for it. But yeah, Rory McIlroy and Tiger Woods came up with the idea, and they're the big promoters of it. So Rory McIlroy over the last few weeks has been promoting TGL. I think he probably needs a week or two to get into the swing of things of proper golf. This is his first start of the year, and there are a lot of LIV players in the field, as you mentioned, which I think is a distraction for McIlroy more than others. Yeah, you know, we know
he's going to get asked about it in a press conference. Tom McKibben's probably going to come up. Yes. I get it.
Yeah, you make a very good point. He's going to have to talk about Tom McKibben. He's going to have to probably take a hanky in when he's talking about Tom McKibben, because it's so traumatic for Rory McIlroy what's happened. He's also got Patrick Reed on the property. Patrick Reed, 2 years ago in this event, you might remember, threw a LIV tee at Rory McIlroy on the driving range. It's like goading him. And there's been legal battles between those two. So as soon as he sees Patrick Reed, he's always on edge, is Rory. He probably feels physically sick every time he sees Patrick Reed. If Patrick Reed starts lobbing LIV tees at him on the driving range again, it could easily unsettle McIlroy. I mean, these sound like tenuous things, but a lot of golf's played in the head, Dave. You play golf in your head.
Well, you mentioned all of that, Steve, and I'm looking at top price 4-1, 3-1, 7-2. When you're getting stuck in at that sort of price, I want all the ducks in a row ready to go.
Yeah, absolutely. And that 4-1 probably won't last. I mean, it's a standout price. Yeah, it's 7-2 generally if you want to get a decent stake on, I'd say. And golf in politics, high on the agenda this week. McIlroy's first start of the year with a bit of rust in his system. There's not enough. I think the gap between McIlroy and Rahm should be bigger, though. If we come on to John Rahm, I mean, when the opening shows came out, I thought McIlroy was a fair price. Didn't want to get involved given the issues that we've discussed. But I thought Rahm was too short. I think there should be a more significant gap between them. John Rahm is making his course debut on a track that a lot of players know like the back of their hand. And John Rahm has not competed since October 20th. So almost 3 months away from competition. I wouldn't put you off McIlroy. I would put you off John Rahm at 11-2. Best price 11-2. He just doesn't know the course like the others, and must be rusty.
Really good field though. Fleetwood, Hovland, Bobby Mack, Adam Scott's in there as well. Just on Hovland, I think we touched on this a little bit last week as well, and he's tinkering again with the swing and the swing coach.
Yeah, and going it alone. And the broken toe, you said you had a broken pinky toe once. How long did that take to heal? He was hobbling around Hawaii a couple of weeks ago. I'd imagine the pinky's still got some issues. I couldn't be going near Hovland. But I hope for the sake of all of us that eventually Hovland rediscovers the old magic, because he's one of my favourite players.
Right, should we move on then? Should we head over to California?
Yes, sir. And we obviously have to discuss what part of California we're in. I mean, yes. It's absolutely tragic what's happening in certain parts of California. But I have, this tournament, as far as I can tell, will be going ahead, and the fires, the wildfires have not been going in that direction. So, this tournament go ahead.
I didn't see any sort of talk about it being in doubt. So
No, it's not. But we're supposed to go to Riviera, which is right in the heart of the action in a couple of weeks for the Genesis. So I think that is in trouble. That is in trouble.
Before we dive into the American Express, two notable names missing here, Steve, that were originally expected to line up, and the biggest two as well.
Yes, Scotty Scheffler pulled out last week, giving his injured hand more time to rest. Injured his hand on Christmas Day, had some minor surgery. We won't be seeing Scotty Scheffler. And then Xander Schauffele, as we like to call him now, withdrew late on Monday night with undisclosed medical reasons. So, it's hard to know what's happening with Xander Schauffele. Maybe he just didn't fancy it. He maybe just didn't want to play. So, undisclosed medical reasons.
Right, this is the American Express, formerly known as the Desert Classic. Thank God they changed the name, because we don't have the Desert Classic, the Dubai's Desert Classic. So, talk to us about the courses then, here, Steve.
I mean, I'm older than you, Dave, and it used to be called the Bob Hope Classic back in the day. It's gone through many names, you know, the Humana. But yeah, now it's called the American Express. We've got it's a three-course meal, Dave. It's a three-course meal. The host course is the Pete Dye Stadium course, 7,210 yards. We've also got the Niklaus Tournament course, 7,147 yards. And we've got La Quinta Country Club, 7,060 yards, all par 72s. So players have a round at each course over the first 3 days. The cut's made on Saturday night. They all gather at the stadium course on Sunday. These courses have been used since 2016. The stadium course is the toughest track. You need low rounds at the other two. Not much rough because we've got amateurs involved this week. You need a hot putter. Great scoring conditions, sunny and calm weather. 156 players going to post.
Is this another putting contest?
Well, John Rahm famously said that, mixed in with a few expletives when he was getting upset a couple of years ago. He called it an effing putting contest, dare we say. There is an element to that. There is an element to that. But you've got to drive well at the stadium courses. So, yeah, the stadium course is no picnic. So, yeah, I'd say no, but I know what you're getting. I know what you're getting at, Dave.
Right, okay. Very open, the market here. Just looking at it, it's 12 the field. We've got Sung Jae-im and Justin Thomas both at 12-1. Sam Burns, generally a 14s chance. Patrick Cantlay, 16-1. Tony Finau's in there as well. Won last year by amateur, your mate, Nick Dunlap. Question for you, Steve. Nick Dunlap was the first amateur to win a PGA Tour event since 1991. Name the player that did it before him.
It was Phil Mickelson. Yeah, it was historic times. Historic times last year, and thoroughly enjoyed watching him. We're going to be talking about Nick Dunlap a lot in this broadcast.
Oh, interesting. Okay, right. How many are in the team alongside Nick Dunlap?
We got five in total, and three of them are massive prizes.
Excellent. That's what we like. That's what we like. Right, main selection then for the American Express.
Drum roll, please. Nick Dunlap. 50-1, Nick Dunlap. I expect you're surprised you can get 50-1 about Nick Dunlap. I certainly was. Our old friend from the summer obviously won the Barracuda Championship on the day that Xander Schauffele won the Open Championship. I'm hoping Dunlap will win the American Express on the same day as Tyrrell Hatton wins the Dubai Desert Classic. The best way to shake off our Nico Echeverria hangover, Dave, is with a double. If you've got a hangover, have a double. That's my motto.
In more ways than one, yeah.
Encouraging alcoholism here. I shouldn't say that. Both of Dunlap's PGA Tour titles have come in California, Dave. The first one came in this event, the American Express, when he broke that way. You follow Phil Mickelson as an amateur to win on the PGA Tour. An incredible achievement. I think 500-1 was available before. He won this tournament last year. Sensational third round 60 at La Quinta. He shot a third round 60. I was reading about that round yesterday. He didn't even know what score he was on. He asked his caddy what was on. He just seemed to be birdieing every single blimmin' hole. That's a 12 under par round that. Gave him a 3-shot lead going into Sunday. Then it was a real battle on Sunday. 1-shot victory. Ummed and ahed over whether to turn professional. Did turn professional. Took him a few months to adjust to professional life. He had a lean spell after that. You know, it was a sudden departure from college golf to the professional game. But then in July, he won that Barracuda Championship. He made it through two tournaments of the FedEx Cup playoffs as well. He was running on empty by the end of the year. He looked jaded at the end of the year. Freshened up over Christmas. Loaded with rust, though, when he went to the Century. He lives in a very cold part of America. Didn't get much practice in over Christmas. But he came out of the blocks in the Century and opened with a 76, 3 over par. But he was 10 under par for his final three rounds. You know, it was a course debut, unfamiliar track to him. Then last week in the Sony, he carded rounds of 68, 67, 67, 66. Got better every day. Finished 10th. That was another course debut. So really impressive. Waiailai doesn't really suit Nick Dunlap, but he putted superbly and finished 10th. If he can carry that red-hot putter to this assignment, which we know suits him down to the ground, I see him giving a stout title defence, Dave. I think he's going to complete a PGA Tour hat-trick on Sunday. at the tender age of 21. He's only just turned 21, and he could have three PGA Tour titles to his name. Just a final fact before I move on, Dave. In that win last week, on the Monday of that win last year, he was in the Pro-Am on La Quinta on the Monday, and he shot 62, first round he'd ever played at La Quinta. So he's played two rounds on that track, La Quinta, 62-60. So I look forward to watching Dunlap on that track particularly.
Yeah, that's a huge price, isn't it? Yeah, the 50s is out there with a number of firms, so readily available, the 50-to-1, which, given that, you know, the two big guns that have dropped out, looks a huge price.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, exciting times, I think. You know, Tyrrell Hatton and Nick Dunlap double. Yeah, we can forget all about Nico Echeverria's three-putt then.
Right, we've got a few in the team, though, for this one. Steve, who else you got?
Davis Thompson, next best, 40-to-1. Another one of my favourites, as you know. Another one of last year's heroes for us. Another former world number one amateur. We've got three former world number one amateurs three. Three of the five are former world number one amateurs. Dunlap, Thompson, and a 500-to-1 chance, which we'll get to later. Thompson, a 25-year-old with huge potential, a 6-foot-4-inch beast, won on the Korn Ferry Tour in 2022, nearly made his PGA Tour breakthrough in the American Express in 2023. You must remember this one. Really unlucky runner-up. Lost by a shot to John Rahm. Thompson left to rue, leaving the flag stick in on his birdie putt at the 71st hole. Long birdie putt at the 71st hole. His ball clunked and clanged off the flag stick and didn't drop. I'm almost certain it would have gone in if the flag stick not been in. It was right in the centre of the hole at the right pace. Thompson was making his Amex debut that year, finished second, followed up with 21st place last year, four rounds in the 60s. This time, tees up in the Amex as a PGA Tour champion for the first time, won the John Deere Classic for us last year in July, four-shot romp in a low-scoring event like this one. He's impressed since, not least when finishing fifth in the Shriners Children's Open on the wrong side of a huge draw bias in October. I think he'll go close to his second PGA Tour title this week, because this is his third start of the year, Dave. I'll give you a stat. Only two of the last 17 winners of this event were making their first start of the year, Dave. Thompson is making his third start of the year. All of my five tips have played this year. My top two tips have played twice this year. And it's all about shedding that Christmas rust. And Thompson opened with a 78. We mentioned Dunlap 76 in the first round of the century. Dunlap opened with a 78, Dave, but 20 under par for his final three rounds of the century. Yeah, really impressive comeback from the 78. And then last week in the Sony, course doesn't really suit him. He narrowly missed the cut. So, nothing to worry about there. Davis Thompson.
Do you know, that was going to be one of my questions for you on the trends of, particularly this time of year, you talk about that Christmas rust, you know, are you looking for players that have been competing and been back at it?
Yeah, absolutely. Because
not everyone would have gone to Hawaii and then come over to California.
No, absolutely. A lot of players making their first start of the year this week. You know, Scheffler was going to do that, but it changed of plan. But I think it's very important, because we all let our hair down over Christmas, Dave, don't we? I know you let your hair down over Christmas. You've trimmed it back since. But it's not just
so
that.
Much yourself.
The weather. No, I need one. The weather is obviously cold as well. There's a lot of places in America, like where Nick Dunlap's from in Alabama, where it's really cold. So even if you wanted to practice over Christmas, you don't, because you're letting your hair down. But even if you wanted to, you're not possible. So these players need to slowly get the cogs moving again. And I think Nick Dunlap and Davis Thompson, two classic examples of players that came out not ready to perform, but they've found it. And I think you see consistent performances from him this week.
No, I don't fancy playing in the cold either. When do you think you'll dust the clubs off, Steve, this year?
Oh, blimey. Yeah. Well, time is always the key factor for me. Yeah, finding the time and finding the weather and finding the energy. It's a difficult combo.
I've got the itch already. It's only the 14th. I've got the itch already.
Have you? No, probably by spring I'll get going again. But that's it, Dave. You know, you have a bit more spare time than me, don't you? Because you're a greyhound man. And
what does that mean?
A lot of tracks closing.
Not
many tracks left. Not many tracks left. Yeah, no.
I'm very busy. Right, we are two down. And the prices are getting bigger, right?
Yes, they're shooting right up, Dave. They're shooting.
Well, we've got three more to come, if my maths are correct.
You are correct. And the third one is Carson Young. 225 to 1. 225 to 1. Carson Young. Watch your bets because Cameron Young's playing in this field. I think Carson is much better value than Cameron. Carson, a neat and tidy player, doesn't hit it very far, but he's precise. The three courses he's facing this week are not long. He won on the Korn Ferry Tour in 2022, and last year he started to threaten on the PGA Tour. He tied for 17th place in the American Express 12 months ago. Poor start, closed with rounds of 64, 68, 65. He was 8th in the Mexico Open, 5th in the John Deere Classic, which Thompson won, 2nd in the Worldwide Technology Championship in November. Missed the cut by a shot last week, Christmas rust. Back-to-back 69s. No disgrace in back-to-back 69s, Dave, I'm sure you'll agree. I think he'd be sharper this week. Generous price.
Okay. Right. A shout-out to all the betting shop staff out there, the ambiguous bettors out there. When I worked in a shop once upon a time and you'd get the security messages come through. The pencil man, he was one of them. You know, someone might just stroll in and say, you know, I'll have a tenner each way on C Young, please.
Yeah. I think they've got systems in place now, haven't they? Because
I'd like to think so. Yeah.
They print out a slip with the name on there, don't they? So I must admit, I did have some skullduggery running through my mind. Not that I would act on it, but I was wondering if people would act on it. And yeah, that thought popped into my head that these days there's checks and balances that you can't get away with that, guys.
Yeah, they don't. There's no carbon copy being pulled off these days. Definitely not.
No, you're safe from the pencil man, and you're safe from multiple Young backers. But yeah, Cameron Young, a much shorter price than Carson Young, but Carson's the one to be on.
Good stuff. Right, two more to come then, and they must be monster prices. What you got for us, Steve?
Kevin, you. I believe in you. 100 to 1, Kevin Yu, the pride of Taiwan, who made his PGA Tour breakthrough in the Sanderson Farms Championship in October. Rounds of 66, 66, 66, 67. Then he won a playoff. He was great on the Korn Ferry Tour in 2021 and 2022. Finished third in the Bermuda Championship at the end of 2022. Contended a couple of times in 2023, but then peaked last year. 12 months ago, he turned up for the American Express, ranked 264th in the world, and he finished third. Third in this, closed with a 63. I think we can safely say he likes this assignment. He tees up this week there as a PGA Tour champion for the first time. He dusted off the Christmas cobwebs with 44th place in the century, 13 under par for his final three rounds. Skip the Sony. I think that's a clue that he knows the Amex is a big opportunity. He wanted to rest up for the Amex. And could go better than last year's third place.
Okay, and you've promised us a 500 to 1 poke as well, Steve. So who is it?
Yes, sir. Braden Thornbury. I think he's massively overpriced. I've been waiting for this lad to secure a PGA Tour card. I've been following him for years. It's taken longer than Braden and I expected him to get to the PGA Tour, but he's there now. We were so relieved. At the end of last year, it happened. And he was in tears. I was in tears. He was world number one amateur, Dave, in 2018.
Of course he was. Yeah.
He was in 2018. He was the best young player in the world. He just starred in the 2017 Walker Cup in California IA. He was a teammate of Scotty Scheffler, Colin Morikawa. That's a good pronunciation. Will Zalatoris. So he was in amongst the elite on that Walker Cup team. They've obviously gone on to bigger and better things. And he still can. He played well in California as an amateur. He'd be pleased to be there this week. He just couldn't get off the Korn Ferry Tour, Dave. I mean, the Korn Ferry Tour is really good standard these days, and Thornbury couldn't get off it. Frustrations were boiling over. But at the age of 27, still a young man, in October last year, at the age of 27, he nailed it at last. He won the Korn Ferry Tour Championship, Dave, the biggest event of them all on that circuit. He closed with a 66. He knew he needed a massive performance. I think it was a win or a solo second to get PGA Tour card, and he delivered it. You know, I'm so pleased for Braden. One-shot victory. He's on the PGA Tour. I'm certain he can compete at this level. He finished fourth as an amateur in the 2017 St. Jude Classic. So he's already proven it that he can compete on the PGA Tour. Last week, rounds of 70 and 69 in the Sony. Narrow miscut. This week's assignment suits him much better. I really hope he makes an impact, Dave. I think you'll fall in love with him because it'd be really entertaining. He's a very fast player, Dave.
Yes, that's what we like. No messing about. That's it.
He's a fast, swashbuckling player. He's attacking. He's a great putter.
Has he got a great head of hair, Steve, as well?
He's got a decent head of hair. Yeah. He likes to let his hair down, Dave. He would have done all manner of things over Christmas, I'm sure. but he's ready for action now. Similar player to Dunlap. Similar price to Dunlap last year. You could have got 501 Dunlap last year, I think. These things happen in the Amex, and it could happen this week.
Well, listen, at that sort of price, you don't have to have a lot on, Steve, do you? So we might get a ride there at a nice big price. Lovely stuff. Right, market leaders. Let's start with JT, who I feel like he's going to win soon. What are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, I think he's going to win soon, but I think it'd be on more difficult track than this because you mentioned, is this a putting competition? If it is, and some people suggest it is, then Justin Thomas is not your man for it, is it? I mean, I think Sung Jae-im is by far the most tempting of the market leaders, but he's not quite big enough to tempt me in. Sung Jae, I think, will be hanging around the leaderboard all week. He was pictured with Anthony Kim last week, actually, in California, practicing in California. He had a selfie with Anthony Kim, and a lot of people were leaping on that as a suggestion that Sung Jae-im is going to join LIV, because obviously Anthony Kim is a liver. But we shall see. But yeah, Sung Jae-im, I'll be disappointed if he wins because he's the short price one that I was considering. I prefer the juice that I've got on my side.
Right, I'll throw a few other names at you. Burns, Patrick Cantlay, Tony Finau as well. What are your thoughts on that trio?
Well, Sam Burns was he made a real howler on the 17th last year in this. He looked like Sam Burns was going to be the one that upset Nick Dunlap backers. And Burns imploded on the 17th, if I remember rightly. So Sam Burns can win this tournament and plays this tournament well. I prefer my guys. I think Dunlap and Thompson, we're going to be backing them for the rest of our lives. These two are two young men that we're going to be backing until the day we die. And we continue that process this week.
Yeah, as long as we can stop backing Thomas Peters and we can start boarding these two, the train of these two, I'll be happy.
It's funny you mention him, Dave. He's playing this week, playing in the Dubai Desert Classic. He's definitely got the ability to win the Dubai Desert Classic.
Oh, leave it alone. I don't care what he's doing.
We'll clip this next week. Is that what they call it? We'll clip it when Thomas Peters is holding the trophy aloft.
Let him. Right, let's have a roundup then of your selections this week, Steve. We've got two events. First up, the Dubai Desert Classic.
Tyrrell Hatton, Laurie Cantor. Hopefully and galloping. I want to see some Laurie Gallop. The American Express, Nick Dunlap. Davis Thompson, Carson Young, watch your bets. Kevin Yu, Braden Thornberry. So pleased to be able to say that. Come on,
and Braden. In between the golf this week, Steve, will you be taking a little bit of the snooker? You know, I'm a top fan of snooker myself. It's not quite the same atmosphere at Ali Pali this week than it has been for your beloved darts.
Yes, and Ronnie O'Sullivan withdrew. Is he okay? Is that mental health issues?
Right. He wasn't going to win anyway.
Was he not? No. He's been terrible, Nick, hasn't he? But I did notice he withdrew. I haven't had a bet on the Masters, so I probably won't watch as much as you do.
It's 11 a.m. on the Tuesday. The winner kicks off in 2 hours' time.
Oh, is that Mark Selby?
No.
I've heard a lot of people.
Mr. Trump, not Donald.
Mr. Trump. Oh, yeah, Trump. Yeah, of course. Yeah. No, I'm a big Trump fan. Yeah, maybe I should get involved. I heard a few people in my ear saying Mark Selby was good value, but I managed to resist having
him.
Did he? Yeah. I've heard Selby's a good bet, but I may not have a bet on the Masters. I may have a look at Judd Trump. Obviously, we've got the darts coming up, Dave. We've got the Bahrain Darts Masters starts on Thursday, so that's of more interest to me. I'm waiting for the draw.
Have you had a look at it? Have you got a double for me with Trump?
Obviously, Master Littler is the apple of my eye. I'm just waiting to see the draw because there's a couple of players I want him to avoid. So If you're having a bet right now before the draw, then obviously Luke Littler to win the Bahrain Darts Masters, the unstoppable nuke.
Tune in every week for multi-sport knowledge, yeah, where we just back the favourite in every event, Judd Trump and Luke Littler.
We've got it all. Yeah, that wouldn't be the worst bet in the world, would it? The Trump lit the double, but it's best of 11 in the first two rounds in Bahrain. So tread carefully on that. But yeah, we got golf fans here, Dave. They're here for the golf and they're here for the football. We've got a football broadcast. We must talk about, haven't we?
Well, yeah, absolutely. Every Thursday here on the Racing Post YouTube channel, The Assist. The lads have been a good nick already this season. They've certainly dusted off the Christmas rust, as Steve would say. And you can join them every Thursday afternoon right here on the Racing Post YouTube channel. Do remember to get involved with us yourself. Like, comment and subscribe. Who are you backing this week? How did you get on last week? What do you make of Tom McKibben? There was loads of chat in the comments last week. Come on down. You know, we're here for you every week. And the chat has always been very, very lively in the comments. I know you cast an eye on them as well, Steve, don't you?
I do, very much so, yeah. And I was fascinated to read about McKibben's girlfriend. That was news to me. So, yeah, any more information on that, gratefully received. I know Tom McKibben needs a haircut, very long hair. He can certainly afford a new haircut if he signs for Liv. I know it's a pot calling kettle, and I need one too. But yeah, get involved. I do read every single one of the comments, even the ones calling me nasty names.
Right, well, back to the nets for you in that cricket jumper of yours, and we will see you next week. Do remember to enjoy the golf, of course, gamble responsibly, and we'll see you next time.